Hello, this is Ryan Seaman with the show Ryan Seaman and Friends. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Before we get started, I just wanted to give a shout out to the drink Liquid Death. They have been supplying us water for all of my episodes, and just wanted to tell you about them. You may start noticing there are strange tall boys of beer in bottled water sections of your local stores, but it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. You may receive a call from your teenager's teacher saying they saw your child drinking a tall boy of beer in their virtual Zoom class, but it's most likely not beer. It's a new mountain spring water brand called Liquid Death. And I guess why it's called Liquid Death is because it will brutally murder your thirst, and they're infinitely recyclable tall boy cans, and they're helping to bring death to plastic bottles everywhere. And they also donate 10% of the profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. So yeah, Liquid Death, it tastes really good. I really love it. I've been actually drinking it nonstop for real. And I just want to give Liquid Death a quick shout out and say thank you for being a part of Ryan Seaman and Friends. So without further ado, this week I have an old friend. God, he and I go back so far. I think I met him in my apartment, you know, years ago in Orange County. Yeah, I met him because there was this band that used to always crash on my couch called Gatsby's American Dream. And they come over, you know, every time they're on tour, because I lived with their manager at the time. And I met this fine young gentleman. His name is Orion Walsh. Orion, thank you so much for coming on my show, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me here. Great to be here in LA with you.
Yeah, I can't believe, you know, we finally got you. You're coming out through California, and you know, this isn't going to air for a little bit. So, but I, you know, you asked me to come play an awesome show with you down in Orange County.
Yeah, I'm excited, man, to have you play.
Yeah, and opening up for a band called Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. They were awesome back in the day. I mean, like, there was a quick moment in the late 90s, or maybe mid-90s, where swing was, like, a thing. Like, Cherry Poppin' Daddies, freaking, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, Royal Crown Review. Those were, like, three bands, dude, that were just really getting it hard on MTV, you know?
Yeah. Like, when I first came to California, like, swing was, like, all the rave. You know, I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And everyone was, like, swing dancing when I first came to, like, my move to Orange County, so...
Well, we'll get into all that, but if you're hearing this already, I played a show with Orion down in Orange County, and I'm sure it was great.
Yeah, definitely.
And there was like 1,000 people. Okay, so so getting started on the program. I met you. You were friends with the Gatsby's American Dream guys. You know, we just started kind of talking in my house, and then we started hanging out together a lot. We even shared a practice spot together.
Yeah,
down in Orange County. So, I was going to say, you know, when I bring people on the show, it's basically about like people I came up with in music. And I'm always interested to hear, you know, how people have gotten their start in music, you know? And so that's why I wanted to have you here today, man. You know?
Sure, brother. Yeah.
And I'm just glad you're able to be in California, you know, cause you're from Nebraska.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I want to get into it, man. So like, tell me like, how did you get into like all this? Cause you know, you had a band and you became a solo artist. Like, I just want to hear it all, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, initially, I like started playing guitar when I was about 15, and you know, just learning guitar from my friends, playing in like little small bands.
So that's when you started playing, just at 15?
At 15, really? Yeah. Okay. And so I was in a couple local bands, like in Nebraska, in Lincoln and in Omaha. We just played shows in Lincoln and Omaha.
Yeah.
And then when I turned 17, I moved out to California. So I just kind of took that jump. I went to college at Vanguard University in Costa Mesa.
Okay. So you graduated high school, decided, hey, I'm going to move out to California.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to do this for real. And like,
what year was that?
That kind of shows my age, but
that's okay.
That was 1999, bro.
Okay. Yeah.
So in 1999, I moved out to Costa Mesa.
Yeah.
And it was like the first time I ever saw the ocean was when I was 17. Yeah. Yeah. So, and like, I thought I was pretty good at guitar at the time.
Okay.
And like everyone on my floor in college play guitar.
Okay.
And like a professional guitar player lived across the hall from me.
Right.
And he like was a session musician, and like I'm like, oh wow. Like I need to practice. Like,
okay.
So I realized, but coming out here, man, it helped me so much. Like it opened so many doors for my music career. So
like, were you in bands like in Omaha? Were you like
only one local band, and we just did like shows for our friends, and like, you know, it was like all ages.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we were 16. Okay. You know what I mean? So like,
I mean, was there like a scene there that you were like a part of, or was it kind of like, okay.
There was a scene, you know, I mean, but I think really when I got started in like playing in bands and like playing good shows was out here. And so like, I played guitar, like even at a church called Melodyland in Anaheim.
Okay.
And it was like, I did that for a couple months and, people knew like on my floor that I like could play guitar.
Right.
And there was this band, this local punk band, all right, called Three for Flinching. And they were like playing shows with Dogwood, playing shows with Thrice.
Dogwood.
And stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They were playing shows like at the Showcase Theater. They were playing
These are all venues that are like kind of non-existent anymore down in California, like in Riverside. Like Showcase Theater, man. I remember that was like a really hard punk venue. I only got to play there one time. But
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we played there all the time. And then of course Chain Reaction. So this local punk band, like I went to their shows or whatever, and like they ended up like losing their bass player.
Okay.
And the guitar player came to me. He's like, I know you're really good at guitar, man, but we know that you love punk rock. And would you want to play bass with us? And I'm like, yeah, I'll try out, you know? And like, I had like dropped out of Vanguard. I only went there one semester. It was a private school. And so I was going to like Orange Coast College, you know, like at OCC.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, yeah, man. And I didn't have any bass gear. And like, I'm supposed to try out like next week.
Oh, man.
So I just go out, I just buy a bass.
Yeah.
Like I buy a Fender bass, I buy a bass gear. I learn all the parts. Like, cause they already had an album out. I like learn all the parts. I'm 19 years old.
Yeah.
I go in and try out. They're like, when can you start? They're like, we want to hire, you know, you're in the band.
So that was your first like anything.
Yeah.
Like outside of Omaha. Okay.
Yeah. And so then it was like, I just got like thrust into the punk rock, Orange County, like punk rock world.
Okay.
So,
wait, you are from Omaha, right? Am I saying this wrong?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe Lincoln. Just thinking back.
Well, I was born in Lincoln. Yeah, I was born in Lincoln. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm from Lincoln originally. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so, and then coming out here and playing in punk bands. So that's how I first got my start. So when I was 19, 20 years old, playing all, you know, we played shows with Thrice, with Dogwood, you know, and other bands at the time. And so it was really cool, man. Like, I went from like just playing like small little shows to playing these bigger shows that were like 300 or 400 people.
So you were just going to shows and then you just started talking to people and that's kind of how it happened.
Is yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah. I was just going, I was in the punk rock scene in Orange County and I was just going to shows. I just love that style of music.
Yeah.
You know, so I would go out to shows like in LA too. I would go out to like No Use for a Name, No Effects, like Good Riddance.
That was like my era for sure.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, man. And so I was just loving it, man. Like, and my roommate was really into punk and all those guys on the floor in college, like really influenced my musical tastes. And my roommate at the time in college, he's like, I'm like, what kind of music do you like? He's like, emo. I'm like, what the hell is that? What the hell is that?
And you know, what's funny is that like, I need to cut you off for a second because when in today's world, right? It gets a lot of flack, right? But what emo music was to me was like some of it even had like screaming, you know, like some of it could have been like Drowning Man, or some of it could have been like emo could have been like Fugazi, you know what I mean? Like I think now, but how people view emo music now is like they call it like Taking Back Sunday, and they call like, you know, fucking My Chemical Romance, and
right,
like, that stuff to me isn't emo. Like emo is like Cursive or like Bright Eyes,
yeah,
you know, it's a little indie-ish, but you know, they're just better looking,
right?
I'm just like Death Cab for Cutie could have been like an emo band.
Absolutely.
You know, or like the Postal Service, like I don't know, I mean, it's just it's not what I remember it being, but a lot of it was like some of it was like screaming, you know, like actual, you know, it was driven from punk rock music. But when you say emo, people are thinking like Hot Topic, Warped Tour.
Oh yeah,
like that's not what I think of emo as.
Me,
you know,
either,
but
yeah,
but now it's become in my world a negative connotation, and I've never identified myself as like an emo person.
Yeah.
I've always, you know, and I'm sure maybe you're probably similar, but like you and I grew up listening to like punk music, or at least SoCal punk music,
right,
you know?
Right.
Like punk music is like Black Flag, Descendants,
right,
you know, Ramones,
yeah,
Sex Pistols. That's like punk stuff. But like the stuff I listened to was like all skate punk, I guess, like NoFX, Bad Religion, Pennywise.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Green Day, Offspring, yeah. You know, all that stuff. So I don't know. Anyway, but
we listened to the same bands.
Yeah,
pretty
no,
much.
We did.
I mean, and I was going to those same shows. You know, I loved going to Warped Tour and like
when it was what it was. Yeah. You know, for me. Yeah.
And like playing in Three for Flinching was like, that's what started my music career pretty much, you know? And so I was in that band for like 2 years playing bass. And then I started to get into like what, you know, what I would just call indie rock.
Right.
You know, some people label it as emo, but like indie rock, you know? And I was like, they were. My other friends were showing me bands like the Get Up Kids and Jimmy World and The Promise Ring.
Love those bands.
And Branson and like all these other ones, right? So I was getting into that, the Appleseed Cast. I was really getting into that too.
What do you call that? Is that emo? Is that indie rock? What is that?
I would just say indie rock.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. And so I was getting into that. And then like my friend that was a drummer and a bass player, they like their band that was like indie rock, they kind of called themselves emo. They like broke up.
Okay.
And then they're like, would you want to start a band with us, like a side project? And I'm like, sure. And they're like, let's call it Slow Coming Day.
Oh, man. Okay. And this is where we get into it. Okay.
Yeah. And so.
What year was that, you think?
That was 2001.
Okay. So, because I met you, I want to say it was 2003 or 4. I'm pretty sure it's 2004.
Yeah, 2004. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you guys had just like started this band.
We just started this band, which was a side project from my punk band.
Okay. So from thin air, you just start this band. Okay?
Yeah.
Slow Coming Day, which like. You know, you went on anyway. I don't want to interrupt you. Sorry, but yeah.
No. So it was a 3-piece band, and then we asked my friend Brad, like this kind of this dude with like really thick brim glasses that looks like kind of Rivers, you know, from Weezer. He was obsessed with Rivers. Like he had listened to the Blue Album, you know, multiple millions of times. And so we came in and just had this band practice, and it just like all clicked. And we're like, whoa, okay, this is gonna happen for real. And our first show was like at this place called Lobby Palooza. Which was like at our old college.
Okay.
There was like the local bands of the college would play.
Sure.
And like Project 86, OC Supertones all went to Vanguard.
The Supertones.
They all went to Vanguard. So like.
I remember that band.
Yeah.
Supertones, Strike Back.
Scott, right, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like we played Lobby Palooza, and then like from there we just started playing shows, and we would like open up for Three for Flinching. We played on like punk shows. We played Coos Cafe, man. Like we played with like Yellow Card, like before they were even known. Like Coos Cafe, like they were on Lobster Records, you know.
Yeah, I toured with them when they were on Lobster Records.
Okay. Yeah. So like
way back, dude. Like 2002.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So I think it was 2002 is when we started playing a lot of shows, and we started playing in Orange County and LA.
Mm-hmm.
And man. And then from there, before you knew it, like we made an EP, like after only being like 5 months of a band, and then all of a sudden, you know, I sent our CD to Tooth and Nail.
Oh, okay. So, like, they don't find you. You go to them.
We go to them. And, okay. We're one of the only bands that signed to Tooth and Nail from a demo.
Wow.
All the other bands weren't signed that way. But we were in another band called Undecided. It was a punk band.
Okay.
So, yeah, they signed us from our demo. And actually, the story is kind of funny. Bill Power, who is the second guy in command at the time, A&R.
Yeah.
I emailed him because, like, Russell from Dogwood said, email this guy. And so I'm like, hey, Bill, like, I'm sending you our promo package.
Were you guys like identified? Because I know a lot of bands that went to Tooth and Nail kind of live under this like Christian umbrella, you know. And in the way I found out about Tooth and Nail is like I was a big MXPX fan growing up. So that's how I learned about Tooth and Nail. And then eventually from there, I mean, I was never into like Christian music. I just listened to music for what it was. I didn't really like put a label on things.
Totally.
You know?
So, yeah. And I like to do that, too. I mean. I think
with music is music. That's
music
that's
is music. Yeah. And you know, it's like if you're a Christian in a band, it's like, sure. Maybe some of the songs you sing about God,
okay.
But a lot of the songs you just sing about life,
okay.
You know, and your experience. I mean, that's what music is about. And so like with Tooth and Nail. Yeah. I mean, there's certain band members that are in bands that are identify with, you know, being a Christian.
Okay.
But I mean, it's not like a quote unquote Christian label as people think it is.
Okay.
So that's like the real truth.
Yeah, because I mean, like, that, so. I mean, I played with a band on Tooth and Nail before, or they used to be on Tooth and Nail, but when I played for them, they weren't. And then, you know, I guess technically sometimes I'll fill in for a band that's on Tooth and Nail now, even.
Right.
Or they were, you know, they're probably one of the bigger bands on that level. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But the point is, so you send in a demo, you get signed. What happens then?
And then it's like everything just took off. I mean, in that band, it was like all of a sudden we're going in the studio with Ed Rose, who like produced the Get Up Kids.
Yeah,
we're making a record. We go out to Kansas. We make the album.
Yeah.
And then like the next year it comes out, 2003, it comes out. And then we like went on the road. We played Cornerstone, like opening up for Further Seems Forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then
was
like,
that with, was that Chris Carrabba?
That wasn't with Chris. That was the second album. Okay. How to Start a Fire, right, with Jason Gleason. Jason Gleason, I think was his name.
Yeah. I toured with Further on that Warped Tour in 02.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean,
with Chris.
Really, no, not with Chris.
Oh, with Jason Gleason.
Yeah. I didn't get to know any of them, you know, but that's here and over there. I just watch them, you know,
dude,
sometimes.
I mean, Jason, like he was a really, really good singer, and he could like imitate Chris, mm-hmm, you know, and that's like a hard voice to imitate.
Yeah.
So in much respect to him, but yeah, that was great. Things started taking off big time before we knew it. 2004, like our album came out in 2003. And then 2004 hit and we were on tour with May and Copeland.
Yeah.
So we were just on the road all the time. That's when like the tour life started. So it was like pretty quickly, man, like from moving to California in 1999, playing in a punk band for 2 years, being in Slocum Day, getting signed, and then like immediately going on the road, like 2003. So like since 2003, I've been touring every year except for 2020.
Wow. Yeah. So. I was going to say, this is like, dude, I was trying to tell somebody, this is like the longest I've been home since like 2006. And it could really like put a mental block on you if you know, if you've been doing it for so long and all of a sudden it just like it's taken away. I mean,
yeah.
Like, how did you identify with that last year?
It was really difficult. I mean, because as musicians, whether it's like our bands are medium size or big or even small,
right?
For those of us that like live the touring life, we go on tour. We're used to like everything changing quickly, like meeting new friends, seeing old friends,
right?
You know, playing shows and doing what we love to do, and like being in the music community,
mm-hmm,
and like without as individuals, well, as human beings, we all need community,
right?
You know, and it's like one thing I realize is, I totally identify with the music community and I'm part of it.
Right.
And like without that, I'm kind of like, I kind of felt lost.
Yeah.
You know, to be quite honest.
Well, you know, I was going to say, it's just, you know, you keep the people around that you want to keep and you know, everything finds a way. That's all.
Exactly.
That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, totally. And I think for me, 2020 was a good time to like, you know, retrospection, like, I recorded a new album. That was really cool. But like, just, I don't know. Now I have kind of a deeper appreciation for like playing live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just like more grateful. I'm grateful again.
Yeah.
You know, like the feeling that I had when I was 19, 20, like came back.
Right.
You know, where I'm like, I'm just grateful to play again.
Dude.
Whether it's for 1,000 people with Big Bad Voodoo Daddy or if it's like in a house show.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think this is a good segue for because like I feel like your journey in Slow Coming Day is like almost, you know, I want to talk about all the tours and stuff, but this is a good time I think to play a song from Slow Coming Day, and so I just want to hear, you know, what song you want to play from the band, and can you tell me a little bit about the song?
Sure, yeah, we could listen to A Midsummer's Nightmare. That was from our Tooth and Nail debut album, way back in the year 2003.
Okay.
So we're going back in time for this one. And the song is about my dad's death, actually. And a lot of people thought I was singing about relationships in the band. And I was actually singing about me and my dad's relationship and me losing my dad.
Right.
So it was cool. Like, a lot of people would, like, write our P.O. box at the time. I mean, that kind of dates it, right? But they would send us these.
P.O. boxes were, like, I thought P.O. boxes were kind of awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Just, like, I mean, bands still kind of have them, you know, even today. Because it's, like, you know, I mean, I personally don't have one. I think our band does, but I just have to, I honestly don't even know. But,
sure. Well, they would send us these letters and they were like, this record helped me not kill myself.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, whoa. Like, then it was like, I felt I was in this, I was like an instrument, you know, like we were an instrument as of this bigger thing that we couldn't really understand,
okay,
you know? And it was like, whoa, that was never my intention writing a song, that it would help someone save someone's life.
Sure.
But like, really, that happened. And I'm like, wow. So yeah, Midsummer's Nightmare. It's about losing my dad, but it's like a lot of people can identify with it that have lost, you know, different family members or people like friends that are close to them that have died. So that's what it's about.
All right. That's pretty heavy, man.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's heavy.
Cool. Okay. Well, this is a Slow Coming Day with A Midsummer's Nightmare. Here it is. Oh, Ryan, you should have told that story when, you know, we were on air, you know, maybe next time. I'm just kidding. Nah, dude. So you are my, you're my 51th episode. 51. Whoa. And, on every single episode, I just come back in, I start laughing, and I do this whole like Andy Kaufman bit where it's like not funny anymore, but it's still kind of funny, but it's not really actually, but then it is to me.
Right.
And I make you laugh, and I'm just, I don't know, here we are. Stupid. Okay. So that was Midsummer's Nightmare. You know, we're back. We're back on the show.
Cool.
So you get, okay, so you get signed to Tooth and Nail. What happens from there for like somebody, you know, that's just, you know, you're young. You're living in Orange County. You send off a demo. They're like, okay, let's do this. You know, like, I mean, what? So you go record. What happens next for the band? Like, what's...
Yeah. I mean, we put the album out. And what was crazy about when we put the album out is like both me and Brad worked at Virgin Records as employees, as employees in Costa Mesa. And like, no doubt, and like other bands did their in stores there when they would come out with a record. And like, our old employees and our friends were like, walking us in, okay, you guys set up over here, and like we're bringing this table out for you to sign autographs, and and it was just like, whoa, this weird moment, you know, where it's like, we did an in store like in Virgin when our album first came out, and it was like kind of surreal, you know, because it was like we had worked there as employees, you know, and so, but then from there, like our lives totally changed, and that record was called Farewell to the Familiar, and it's like really titled well because like. Everything that was before was then gone. Okay. And like, basically me and Brad, like we lost our drummer and bass player. We got a different lineups for our drummer and bass player. And then we just went on the road like constantly. We toured with May Copeland. Most of that, like that was May's first headlining tour that they ever did.
Okay.
So like they like toured with Elliot and like Something Corporate and a couple of their bands at that time.
So this is like early on in the early 2000s.
Yeah, this was 2004, and so like it was our first tour.
Okay,
was with May and Copeland all around the United States.
That's a huge, like back then especially. It's pretty big, man. You're probably playing for like at least 1,000 people a night.
Yeah,
you know?
Yes. Yeah. And some of those shows were 1,500, and the smallest show we did was still like almost sold out. Like. At a club for 400 people.
Right.
Or like 350. Yeah, that was like the smallest one we did.
Yeah.
So it was all the East Coast and West Coast was sold out on that tour. And that's then we went from that tour to jumping on the Tooth and Nail tour. And May went to bat for us.
Wow.
They because that tour was supposed to be further, seems forever, but they dropped off. So it was Amber Lynn, Me Without You, Emery, and Watashi Wa.
And I remember all those bands, man. Amber Ling like kind of blew up.
Yeah.
You know, for a
and
second.
So,
yeah.
So May joined the tour for like 8 shows and they're like, we're bringing Slow Coming Day with us. And Slow Coming Day has to be on this tour or we're not coming. That's basically what they told the agent. And like Dave from May, like totally went to bat for us.
That's
crazy. He was awesome. Yeah. And like me and Dave, like basically loved the same bands. Mm-hmm. I looked through his CD collection one night at the hotel.
Yeah.
You know, an after
hours
thing.
I remember you'd have that. Like, now it's just like you look through people's phones and like their playlist, like, what do you got? You know, but now it's like, oh, what's your CD jacket? What does that look like?
Yeah.
And you probably had like 40 CDs, like all your shit.
Yeah. And it was like almost identical.
That's,
and I'm like,
that's
wow.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that was a really cool relationship. And then, we did 8 shows on that Tooth and Nail tour and we played South by Southwest for the first time. So that was like 2004 for us was epic. And then we went on tour with Gatsby's American Dream and As Tall as Lions. And so it was.
Ah, now the story comes further. Okay.
Yeah. So that's how I knew Gatsby's. And like, we toured all over the East Coast together and we were the opening band for those guys.
Okay.
And that's how I became friends with them. And that's how I became friends with you.
Yeah. That's kind of crazy how that all worked out. I literally remember just like coming home. I don't know. I came home from like work one day or something and you're just like on our, and I knew Gatsby's had this like weird tour schedule where they had to like be in LA for like a week. Like they'd have like a show in LA and the day off, then San Diego and they come back, or, you know, Anaheim and then they come back and they're just like, they just crash at the house. And, And I think like Rudy, the drummer, his younger brother was in, the Blood Brothers, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Dude, I mean, my whole world like opened up with those guys, like just hanging out. So like those dudes crashed at our house, like Bear versus Shark.
Yeah. Dude.
Crashed at our house. Like
Rudy is super good at drums. He was
really
he was in Waxwing.
Waxwing. I remember that band too.
Yeah. Like so, super legit music.
Dude, I remember Bobby from what was his brother's name? Do you remember?
I remember his brother's face, but I can't remember his name.
I'm such an idiot.
But anyway, he was the merch guy, yeah.
Yeah, so Bobby, so my first encounter at Gatsby's, I had like come home from like a long ass day of work or something, and Bobby's brother is like sleeping in my bed. And I was like, you know, and like nobody asked me, nobody like called, whatever. Texting really wasn't like a thing yet. And I was just like, I go in the room and I'm like, hey man, you're in my bed and like, that's totally like cool, but like, I'm home now and like I need my bed. And he's like, I'm so sorry. Oh, Billy, that's his name.
Billy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, of
sorry.
Course. I couldn't
like,
forget Billy.
Like,
yeah.
Like, who is this guy? And that was my first introduction to Gatsby's. And so, you know, they kept crashing at our house. Cause the guy that I had on my show, last week, Mike Kaminsky, you know, he managed them. And
okay.
They would come crash at our house and you just were friends with them. They came, we start talking to you and I, and then like all hell would ensue with our friendship, dude.
Definitely, man.
I think the best thing about you, Orion, is that you were always down to hang out. We would go, I think like I was kind of a big drinker back in the, I've since like, I'm kind of saying this today on the show for the first time, but like I've stopped. So I've been,
congratulations,
you know,
man.
Thank you. Yeah. But yeah, I've been 5 months sober.
That's awesome, dude.
And, it's been really crazy, but I was going to say like, you know, when you're in your early 20s, I think like you're finding out like kind of who you are and what you do. And, you know, and I think I was just always addicted to like this like high of like always having fun, you know?
Yeah. The dopamine,
and,
man.
And so, but what I was going to say to you is like back in the day, man, like we would, you and I would roll to this place called Moscow.
Yes.
In LA. It was an alternative place, but like you and I basically had the same fucking, you and I had the same like goofy haircut and we both had black hair.
Black hair swooped over, man.
Both did the swoop and all that stuff. And we go up to people and be like, I'm Ryan and I'm
Orion.
I think that if you and I, back then were ever in a band together, we probably wouldn't have gotten anything done.
Right.
At all.
Right.
We just loved to have fun. That was like our whole deal, man.
We would have absolutely not gotten anything done.
No, absolutely not. We've gotten kicked out of places, for drinking too much. these are things I don't recommend people doing. But you know, I'm just trying to put it out there, you know,
right.
You know, we were dumb just like any other people in their early 20s.
Yeah,
that's it.
Absolutely. You
know? And so, but I'm glad I'm still like alive. I'm glad I'm still here. And
me too, man. I'm glad you're here too.
Yeah. I'm also glad you're here. So, okay. So you're, yeah, you were like one of my favorite people to just go hang out with. And you and I just like, I would always count on you for like the fun vibe, the fun times. And, you know, we got to go to all these clubs in LA at the time. Like they're playing indie rock music. So we would go to like Moscow. What was some other place? Like Bang?
Bang. And there was Beat It.
Beat It.
Yeah. And that was like kind of all the, you know, everyone was going there. Like that, like.
Yeah, we went bands. Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday.
Saturday, Sunday, and Wednesday.
Those were the days that you would just like go out and in California.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
and a lot of the Orange County people that live down there like came up to LA to party, to dance. And, you know, it's like, it was just a really fun time to be alive, actually.
Yeah. It was a good community, good people. Like looking back on it now, because it's like, dude, it's like completely different today.
It's totally different now. Yeah.
It's super different. Okay. So you tour out. So we meet up. We're friends. You're touring forever with Slow Coming Day. We end up actually sharing a practice spot for like a couple of years in Orange County. What happens after Slow Coming Day? Because now you are like a renowned like singer songwriter, and what I've love about you though is that like you've been doing this. This has been like you the whole time I've known you, bro. Like you have not stopped. You just stuck to your guns and you've booked all your own stuff. You just travel. Sometimes you travel alone. I just want to hear about like your journey as like a solo artist.
Yeah. You know? Once I went solo, man, I mean, it was like, I, you know, went to the folk genre. And like, cause I was,
what made you want to do that? Like, so you break up the band, like stops, and what makes you want to be like a solo guy? Like what's the, you know?
I mean, there is kind of that natural progression between like rock and roll. And then like the acoustic guitar,
okay,
you know, when you reach your 30s, but okay. I mean, and not for everybody, but for me, it was like, what really happened was at Amoeba Records, I got a Johnny Cash best of CD and I was like listening to it all the time on the road.
Okay.
And so I was like listening to this kind of music and I'm like, this music's tough. Like I can identify to this music. Like the, you know, and so I just really got into Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash. I got back to the end of the Beatles.
Okay.
All this other music. And yeah. So I'm like, I want to play folk music. And I'm like, I'll just be a singer-songwriter because I can't break up with myself. You know? Okay. And I just, yeah. Too many different band members and like burning bridges. But what was cool is like when I got sober, I like went back and made amends to everybody.
Hmm.
So like, you know, I have good relationships even with the people that there were some bridges burned. But the solo journey has been like really cool. And yeah. I've been like, just kind of like, I moved back to Nebraska in 2008 and I like made my first solo record, but I made it out here in California. And then I mastered it in Nebraska. And I mastered it with like the guy who did Bright Eyes, The Cursive, wow. Faint. Like I went into his mastering studio.
So you went to like the guy.
Yeah. Doug Van Sloan. Huh. So Doug Van Sloan mastered my first two solo records. And like, I just put it out independently, you know, and I just toured the country, like in my car alone. Like playing small bars,
that's like
small
so
cafes.
Crazy to me. Not like you didn't bring out like a friend or like a merch per like nothing. Just
no,
you.
No, but I was because like my relationships because I'd already toured a bunch, like in Slow Coming Day, I just like stayed with friends and like I still did shows with like local bands or like local people that I knew.
Isn't that amazing that like okay, so like this is where you and I identify a lot, but like we talk about community. And coming up, like in you know, when we were in our early 20s, like when I met Mike Kaminsky and everything. I just like would come up and like basically want to, you know, do music like forever.
Yeah.
And I feel like in music, the more people, and I know this sounds crazy, but the more people that you can like surround yourself with that like do what you do, you know, like when you rise, your friends rise with you. You know what I'm saying? And like, and this is just something I've always wanted to do. I've known this since I was like 11, man, you know, like just playing bass and playing drums and playing just everything. And like, but when you go out on the road, especially the first time you want to make like adventures, you want to make like memorable experiences. And so like, I made friends almost in like, I think if I were to go to any city in America, like any major city, like I would have legitimately like a place to stay, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And that's what you do on the road. Cause like, you know, bands can't afford, like sometimes when you're like starting out as a band, maybe you're getting paid like $100,
right,
you know, and
right.
then you go crash on like someone's couch because you can't fucking afford a hotel room.
Yeah.
And you need to get to the next city or no one buys your shirts or whatever. And it's just like, it's like a kind of a gypsy life, man. And I'm just saying the level that like most bands are at, then they never get past it.
Right.
You
right.
know, and I always tell people, seriously, I think I've said this literally in every episode, but like nine times, again, you are the example. You are the 1%, whether you believe it or not, but 9 times out of 10, bands fail. And the 1 in 10 that don't fail were the ones that were too stupid to stop.
Yeah.
And you are the 1 in 10 that didn't stop.
Thank you, brother.
And
yeah.
You're able to make this your life and you can make a living, whether it's big or small. And I have a lot of respect for you, man. And you and I have been doing this like legitimately forever.
Yeah.
And and so I just think it's important, like when people are like, man, like Ryan, like some people are like, man, Ryan just knows everybody, you know? It's like, yeah, because I spent like fucking 15 years of my life eating shit on the road and not having place like to stay or friends to meet up with or whatever. And you want to have good times in the city. And so I'm an extrovert. I really am. So, you know, I mean, it just comes out of like, you know, habitat. And
yeah.
And you necessity and you know, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. I guess what I'm saying is that like the road will take you where you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many doors open when you go on the road and it's like, you know, like you were talking about, like you paid your dues. It's like you weren't just all of a sudden in falling in reverse and then I don't know how, you know,
right.
like you paid your dues.
I mean, you've known me since like, I mean, some of my first real touring started like in like 2002. Like I was gone like a lot of that year, even though I was still in high school and like I graduated and all, whatever. And my first real tour was in 2001. But then like, I was in that band Fairview. And the reason why I think we met was because I was just like at home during that time. And we were trying to like, we were talking to all these like major labels and just whatever the fuck. And like, no deal was good enough and this and that. And like, but we shared a practice spot and you were always on the road. And like, I don't know, man. So I think that there's always a reason why I think people meet in general.
Totally.
You know?
There's
always a reason. And with you and me, it's like, we've been in touch this whole time, but, I think what's really crazy though is I wasn't touring at that time. That was like actually the longest I. So like 2002, I was on tour the whole year. 2003 through 5, I wasn't. You know, and I was just trying to make a name and play shows and just do the whole thing. Is working like all these shitty jobs and stuff. I hated it. And of course, like who hates working a job that you hate? You know what I mean? Who loves doing that? So, Yeah, but then like I met you during that whole time. I think I had like all these stupid jobs I just fucking was miserable with, and then finally when I Am Ghost came around, that was the beginning of like, okay, like now I'm doing this. Like, yeah, I'm not making like anything, but like I'm doing this like full fucking time.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, and so that's been my journey since.
Totally, know? Man. And that's like, you know, as a musician, that's when
you haven't stopped like at all. And I think you're fascinating.
Stopped.
And it's like I love to bring on people on the show that like, you know, maybe not like a lot of people like know, but I want people to know them. And
well, thanks, man.
And
yeah.
I have a lot of respect for you just as an artist. I think this is a good time to play another song of yours.
Okay, yeah, you know? We'll do it. We'll play a song for my solo career.
Yeah, I would love to do that. So talk about it and let's have it go.
For sure, brother. Yeah. The song we'll listen to is called Planes, Trains, Automobiles, and it's about, you know, jet setting, like living the like traveler lifestyle and like touring around the world.
And so, like, automobiles, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, I've done now 8 tours to Europe. And, like, usually,
eight
tours to Europe. I've been super blessed, man. And so,
we need to talk about, like, all the challenges and everything that comes into that. So,
totally. And so, yeah, this song is written when I came back from tour in Europe and, like, I almost moved there. But it's literally about just traveling on planes, trains, automobiles, meeting new people, and then coming home, like, after you've had all these amazing traveling experiences.
Right.
And just what that feeling's like.
All right. Well, then this is Orion Walsh with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Here it is. Oh, man. That sucks. No one's going to hear that. God, you know? Where'd you even get that anyway?
It was unopened.
Oh.
It was right here.
just chilling. All right. So we're back. We are back on the Ryan Seaman and Friends Superpower 55 minutes, and maybe they won't cut my show off this time, because usually we don't get to the end, and then they cut it off without me saying goodbye, but we got some time, according to this little clock I got.
Sweet.
I don't know why I'm saying that or talking like that. Okay, so we're back. So, I mean, when you started traveling around, so being a solo artist, like, so we're talking about, like, you going to Europe. I mean,
yeah.
That's got to be a pain in the ass. Like, what's that like? Do you speak French or do you speak any other languages or like?
Yeah, I can speak a little bit of French, like just to order my food and uh-huh. and say hello. And then okay. in German, I can speak a little bit more.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sprechen ein bisschen Deutsch.
Ah.
Yeah. Alles gut. Alles klar.
Okay. I think I vaguely picked up any of that.
Genau.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome for all you German people that like the show, if there's anybody out there listening in Germany. Anyway, so yeah, so I mean, what made you want to go to all these places, and you didn't have like a booking agent? You just kind of like did it yourself. Like, how does one go, hey, you know what, I'm just gonna go to France, and I'm gonna go to Germany, and I'm gonna go to Poland? Like enlighten me.
Yeah, well, I mean, anyone can really do it if you're willing to, like, right. if you're willing to travel for cheap, and like you're willing to like give up a few luxuries, you know, I mean. Yeah. And, like, you can fly to Europe for cheaper now. There was, like, Norwegian Airlines, but, like, they kind of went out of business except for Europe.
No, I mean, like, physically, like, you just, like, pick a random venue or, like, how do you get your shows? Like, how do you...
Oh, I understand. Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, actually, initially, in 2011, the first tour was...
Because people that listen to this show, like, are trying to, like, I think are trying to get into music or they want to learn, you know, and that's kind of why I have people on here as well. It's not just music people, just people getting into, like, what they love to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Well... Initially, my girlfriend took me on tour with her, and I was opening up for her.
You're
and
kidding.
She was on a no, I'm not. And
oh,
she,
okay. That's
she
crazy.
Was
it's awesome.
She was like on a booking agent. She had a booking agent in Europe, in Germany, and so we did 25 shows in 26 days. We rented a car. We went all around the Autobahn. Like all the
God.
Shows were packed out. The shows were amazing.
This is all in Germany.
In Germany, in Czech Republic,
okay,
Denmark, Switzerland, and Italy.
Wow.
And we also did the UK on that tour. And so we were on the road for like in total, like 2 months. Mm. And yeah, we played venues. Like the booking agent did set it all up. The shows were packed out. It was really good. We like sold out of all our merch. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah.
But I didn't go back for 3 years after that. And me and my girlfriend split ways. She actually,
so did you lose momentum then? When
yeah,
okay.
Definitely. I lost momentum in Europe, and like she actually moved to Hamburg to Germany. And so, yeah. I was like in America, like, unfortunately, like, I'm just being honest, like working at Guitar Center at the
whatever.
Time. And like, anyway, my friend Christoph was like, just come over to Germany, Orion. I'll book you some house concerts. And I'm like, that sounds insane. I'll never make any money doing that.
Yeah.
And he asked me 14 different times.
Okay.
And I said no every time. The 15th time, he's like, he would write to me in Beatles lyrics. He's like, we can work it out, Orion, across the universe. And I'm like, okay. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
He's like, just come. You must come to Germany.
Okay.
And so I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna take the risk.
Okay.
And so I bought a flight for $750, Air Berlin.
Is that round trip?
Round trip.
Okay.
From the U.S., from Chicago to Berlin and back. And we played 2 weeks of house concerts.
Okay.
And I made all my money back.
Wow.
And that was the first trip doing it DIY.
Okay.
And so I've been going back ever since, and yeah. It's just gotten better and better.
Wow.
So initially it's like taking that risk.
Mm-hmm.
When my girlfriend initially went, she only knew one person. She had no booking agent. She played only one show.
Yeah.
But that one show, she was willing to risk. That mm-hmm. one show she played.
Yeah.
Someone told her, told their friend, and they're like, come on tour with my friend and like play like one or two shows with them. She ended up doing the whole tour, and then that guy's booking agent, the guy that she was opening up for,
mm-hmm.
his agent ended up signing her.
Wow.
So sometimes it's just stepping out. For those of you listening that like, for the, you know, you're interested about being in the music industry or touring in Europe, or how do you do that? Or how do I tour America? Sometimes it's like just stepping out and taking the risk.
Right.
You know, and you have to like kind of pay your dues initially. You know, it's right. like now when I go to Europe, I play like nice venues,
right?
Really great house shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like people are so hospitable to me there.
Yeah.
And they're always like, Orion, please stay here. And we want you to live here in Germany with us. So I'm thinking about moving to Berlin. So
that's crazy. Yeah. And I heard it's like kind of cheap.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And some of the other German cities are more expensive, but it's pretty like for an international like city, Berlin is pretty awesome.
Dude,
you know,
I remember I had this day off in, with IDK, we had this day off in Dusseldorf.
And yeah.
We were riding those little like lime scooters. This is like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I just remember like we went to this bar or whatever. It was like me and the crew because that's who hangs out. And so we just went there and we took all the little bird scooters and we sat at the bar and this guy was just talking to us in like perfect English. And I was like, you're American, huh? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, where are you from? And he's like, oh, I'm from like, it was like South Carolina or something like that. And we just started talking. He's like, yeah, man, like I don't speak any German. I'm just here. Like I'm just working this job into the table. And, you know, whatever. So I just like, holy shit, man. I mean, it's, you can live there and be an American. I don't know how long you can be there without like, you know, the tourist visa thing or the work visa. I don't know how it works yet, you know, but
yeah.
I've been over there a few times, but the only time I've ever been over there was just for playing shows. I've never been there as like a tourist, you know, but I've done touristy things on my days off in Germany, you know, went to like, I saw part of the Berlin Wall, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah, dude.
Off the train. That was really crazy. I was over there with this man, Riot Child, when I saw that.
Okay, and, sweet.
Yeah. That was a long time ago. But, God, Ryan, we don't have, like, too much time left. But
Well, thanks for having me on, Ryan Seaman and Friends.
Yeah. I appreciate
I am your friend.
You're right. And how this kind of came up was you were crashing at my house, and I'm like, you know, I really just need to have you, like, on my podcast because I think you're, like, a really, really interesting person. And we've had so many good times, and I think the world should get to know Orion Walsh. That's what I think.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. So, like, how can people find you if they're trying to search you on the web? Like, your Instagram, your Twitter, all that
totally,
stuff.
Totally, yeah. My Instagram's just Orion Walsh Music, so O-R-I-O-N, and then Walsh, W-A-L-S-H, and Music. Uh-huh. Orion Walsh Music for Instagram.
Yeah.
And you can follow my travels there. I don't post a lot of pictures, but whenever I'm like touring in Europe, I post pictures quite a bit.
You got like a Twitter?
I don't have Twitter.
You got Facebook?
I got Facebook, orionwalsh.com or facebook.com/OrionWalsh.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
And then Spotify, you can just type my name in there.
Yeah.
Orion Walsh, or in Apple Music, and all my records are there. So, and I just came out with a new album.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. It's called So Many Places to See, and a guy that worked with George Clinton and a folk singer called Andre Von Campton, he helped me produce it. So it's just me and him playing all the instruments.
Holy shit. So, what about the drums that were on some of the stuff, you know? Or were there any drums?
There was drums.
Okay.
Was it
programmed?
The truth? Yeah.
It was programmed, right?
Yeah.
I knew it, dude. listening to some of your stuff, I was just like, I'm like, there's no way. I'm like, this is on a loop or something. But I mean, dude,
it's on a loop.
Sounds real.
Thank you.
It all sounds real.
You did.
You can do so much with like computers, man. It's just like it's kind of crazy. But
as a solo artist, it's just easier.
Yeah. But, do you have any shows coming up for like? Because we're in October right now. Like, do you have any shows coming up like the rest of the year or?
Right now, I'm in Germany.
Right now, you're in Germany.
I'm in October in Germany. I'm on tour.
Okay.
So if you live in Germany, come out to see me, and you can go on my website, orionwalsh.com, and have all the dates there.
Are you on what's the town? Bansentown? Are you all, are you listening on there too?
Yep. And all my dates are listed on Spotify too. Yep.
Mm-hmm. God, this is, dude, I'm just so happy that you got to come in, and I'm happy I was able to, you know, by the time people listen to this, I'm happy I was able to play with you at, you know, said music festival in Orange County. And, you know, I'm pretty sure we had a lot of fun.
It was awesome.
And I got to eat, you know, some good backstage food, and I got to see that one, you know, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy song.
Yeah, dude.
Of whatever it is they play, that Go Daddy-O. Yeah. Yeah.
The smash hit from the Super Bowl. No.
No, dude, they played the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
God. So 1990, what was it, 1999 or something? They were a huge ass band, dude. I think people like forget. You know, MXPX is also on a Super Bowl commercial. Do you remember that? It was for like Diet Pepsi.
Wow. I learned something new today.
Yeah. I'm sure you could YouTube it. But all right, well, if you've made it this far, then it means my show didn't get abruptly cut off by Adobe Radio, because like they've cut it off on accident. But yeah, up next is Gone Fishkin. They've done this literally four times. And I've told Fish, I'm like, hey man, like they're cutting out my episodes at the end, and they're like, oh well. I mean, so I don't even know if anybody's even listening to this right now. So we'll see what happens, because this is what happens at Adobe Radio. Just kidding, not really. I'm not kidding at all. But Fish, yeah, Gone Fishkin is on next. I love you, Fish, so much, and if you're listening, I really appreciate you. And tune in next week. It's on every single week, Ryan Seaman and Friends, right here on Adobe Radio. And I'd like to thank Orion Walsh for coming in again. And we will see you guys all next time on Ryan Seaman and Friends. And tune in and tell all your friends about it. And if you just are tuning in now, my handle is at Ryan Seaman on Instagram and Twitter. And if you're a Facebook person, it's at, you know, drummer Ryan Seaman. So, all right. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you next week.